Let's go in-depth on Iowa State with the Des Moines Register. It's time for Cyclone Insider, powered by G-Meg's 5th Street Pub on 1460 KXNO.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's Cyclone Insider here with our friends from the Des Moines Register on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO. Things are heating up in the Big 12. As Iowa State's won a couple of Big 12 games in a row, and we've got a interesting rest of the season to talk about. I'm Chris Williams, joined as always by Randy Peterson and Tommy Birch. Start with you, Pete. How was Pittsburgh? What I assume you stayed in Pittsburgh, made your way down to Morgantown.
Yeah, it was pretty uneventful. I mean, it's
you like Pittsburgh?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I wish there's stuff going on downtown that we could get downtown to see, but yeah. But I mean, like the Penguins weren't home. Downtown Pittsburgh's kind of cool. I mean, the football stadium and the baseball stadium there, right on the river, the bridges.
You ever go to a ball game there?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I've been to baseball and I've covered a football game there. Iowa played at Pitt a long time ago.
I remember that actually.
That was
when I was back in
Champaign. Jake Christensen's blow up with
all right. They played at
football
Heinz Field
staff.
There?
They do.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good.
Tommy Birch, how was Morgantown? Do you enjoy Morgantown?
Yeah, it was
lovely.
How was
your beard compared to the Morgantown
beard? I fit right in there. The people loved me there. I was talking to the sideline security guy. He had a beard that just wasn't nearly as good as mine. So
man, they kept of course I watched it on television, and the one thing that stands out to me about those games at Morgantown, every fan that they like scan on TV looks drunk.
Well,
they all have a beer in their hand.
Yeah, every fan has a beard and two beers in their hand.
That's pretty valid. A couple of long road trips, back-to-back weeks for Iowa State. The two longest on the schedule, actually, is the Cyclones will be heading to Lubbock, Texas, coming up on Saturday.
By way of Denver.
And I want to talk to Peter.
There's your segue.
About Denver. we won't lead the show with it, but coming up later in the program, I want to inform Peterson about the myths. Maybe they're not myths.
Perhaps
they are real.
Fact.
Yeah, these stories, the conspiracy theories about the Denver airport. I'm very passionate about this. I've done hours of research on this, and Peterson doesn't even know what we're talking about. So we're going to fill
him
in. He
does a little bit. Yeah. We had boots on the ground a couple of years ago, and I tried explaining it to him.
While we were there for basketball?
No, it was for football. We had a layover there somewhere, and okay. I tried explaining to him
about the
importance of where we were.
Yeah. No, when I was there for hoops, whatever year we were there.
That was, they started there and then went to Chicago.
Yeah. I was doing some investigating while I was at the airport as well. We'll talk about that later on.
See what you uncovered. Yeah.
Probably shouldn't lead the program. I don't know if Craig Lowe would appreciate leading the show with Denver Airport talk or Andrew Downs for that matter. But, I mean, Iowa State really, it took them a while, Randy, but it was still a very dominant victory, I thought, over West Virginia, even though it was tied at halftime. I mean, I don't know. Just kind of got the feeling the whole time that Iowa State was a lot better than West Virginia.
I never once thought Iowa State was in jeopardy.
Yeah.
Of losing this game. West Virginia is, I think they've got. I think they're a coming program. I think they'll be fine, but. And they played okay for a half without their starting quarterback, essentially. And I don't know whether he's even playing this week. He's got some kind of chest thing, I believe. So, I mean, hats off to West Virginia for hanging in there. But I was never, ever I did never think that Iowa State, that a loss was going to be in jeopardy. Now, the first half was very telling, though. I mean, that was the half where Breece Hall became the number one running back. Because after Kene had, even what Campbell said, not a very good game. That was Kene, very telling in that respect.
That one drive.
Three drops.
Where they dropped the three passes.
Including a pick.
That was as bad of a drive as they've had all season.
They had a hold, too.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was horrible. Bad. But then, you're right, Pete. Breece Hall comes on and takes advantage of the situation that was presented to him, and you know, that was kind of I think it took a little longer than we all kind of imagined, but I remember, you know, sitting here doing this show with you guys before the Northern Iowa game, and we all thought Breece would eventually take over. And I won't lie, though, I was kind of leaning like it may not happen this year based off of what we had seen. But that was the guy we had heard everything about.
We didn't. Yeah, I mean, I think we all decided that it was going to be the Baylor game. We just missed it by a game or two. But
yeah.
But I guess we didn't take into consideration the practice element of it. And Campbell insinuated pretty heavily, and one of the offensive coaches did to me as well after the game, that you know, he goes back to you, if you practice well, you play. And I'm assuming that some of Breece's practices weren't the greatest, whether there were and likely because he's a true freshman, he's still learning the ropes. I mean, he's still, you know, okay, he had a semester of already going to class, but he's still learning the ins and outs of behind the scenes of being a big time football player. So I think they've got that figured out now, and I look for him to start the next however many games in a row.
I mean, it took David Montgomery a little bit of time. Now, granted, they had Mike Warren returning as kind of the main man, but I mean, you even go back and you watch the early film of David Montgomery, you could tell there was a learning period, an adjustment period, where he didn't just come right out and shine and turn into kind of this, you know, 1,000-yard back-breaking rusher that we know him to be now. And even, you know, Campbell had said post-game, you know, look, there were signs of this promise and potential out of Breece Hall. The only thing that was lacking was consistency. And that makes complete sense that the guy showing the most consistency are your most veteran guys in the room. You know, Kanae Nwangu, Johnny Lang.
Yeah.
You know, even Chung Crony Jr. to a certain degree. But, I mean, I think Breece Hall is going to be the guy moving forward, but I'm not all in right away saying, hey, now Breece gets the starting job on Saturday. Yeah, Breece is going to be averaging, you know, 80 to 100 yards a game. I still think you're going to see maybe that inconsistency that you would expect out of a freshman, where there probably are going to be still some tough times ahead for him.
I wouldn't be surprised either, just knowing Matt Campbell, if I think Johnny Lang will still be in the game plan.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I don't think that, like, we're done seeing any of those other guys.
I wouldn't be surprised if Johnny Lang's starting on Saturday. Would you?
No, I wouldn't either. I would be surprised if he gets the most carries.
Sure.
I think that Breece Hall will get the most carry. What about you, Pete? I mean, do you think it's all Hall from here on out?
I think it's all Hall from here on out.
Okay.
And I'm not saying he's going to, like Tommy said, he's not going to get 80 to 100 yards a game. I mean, he may Saturday. Texas Tech's given up 185.2 yards of rushing a game. So they're not the greatest. They've given up 14 rushing touchdowns. So, yeah, I'm saying that Saturday could be another big game for whoever gets the most carries, and I'm assuming it's Breece Hall. I mean, this is kind of reminiscent of Oklahoma State last year with Brock Purdy. Now, I'm not saying that Breece Hall is going to go on and set the Big 12 on fire like Purdy did in his after eight games or whatever it was he played last year. But I'm saying that in a way this was West Virginia was Brock Purdy's Oklahoma State, or was the game that Breece Hall will remember as, okay, this is the game that my breakout game.
Yeah,
that I showed that I can play.
I kind of look at it differently, where at least the Oklahoma State game for Brock Purdy, it was like, okay, he is the guy moving forward. There is no doubt that, you know, that's your dude. Things are full steer ahead for Brock Purdy. Whereas this game with Breece Hall, yeah, I think we're like, okay, this is a big breakout game for him. But I think there are still questions, like, okay, there are other guys in that room. It's not so clear-cut that he is absolutely going to be the guy, the main focal point. I mean, he'll probably get the bulk of the carries, but there could still be a short leash on him, where I think we've seen, you know, even early on in the West Virginia game, I didn't think Johnny Lang looked too bad.
No, and I think that was kind of the point that I was just going to try and get in here, is that really the offensive line has everything to do with it, too. I mean, Hall was really good. He was finishing runs. He was falling forward.
He was blocking well, too.
Yeah, I do think that most of those guys could have had 100 yards on Saturday. I think that the offensive line was just making those sort of holes. And really, Peterson, like, they haven't been bad in all, but really the Baylor game, the offensive line didn't play that well, but they still averaged, you know, 5-6 yards per play against you and I. I mean, the line really has been pretty good all year, other than, I would say, the Baylor game, and I thought that it maxed out on Saturday. It was probably the best we've seen from it. Do you agree?
Oh, I agree 100%. The line played the best it's played. Those guys have played, by the way, this is kind of an aside, three straight games without coming out, every snap for three games in a row.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good stat. Good pull.
But comparing Lang and Breece Hall, they're different runners. Replay the game. Breece Hall's getting his yards between the guards.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he got the yards against West Virginia. Johnny Lang was, he didn't know where he was going. He had happy feet.
And that's why I think sometimes it makes sense to play both going forward. A little bit of a one-two.
Maybe, but I guess I was, this is a roundabout way for me to say that Breece Hall was trusting the hole.
Good point.
More, yeah. Trusting the play more than
which is something David Montgomery really never did.
Neither one of these guys are David Montgomery.
But so, like, I think David got to a point, even at the end of his, when there were holes, he didn't trust it because there weren't any at the start of his career. So he just got to the point where he was, you know, just it was his instinct to cut out.
And I think maybe it was instinct's a good word. I think maybe that Breece Hall does have instinct, but he hasn't been around long enough to actually put it to use. And on Saturday, at least, trusting the hole worked.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. 515-284-5966. This is the Cyclone Insider program here with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO. Busy week up at Iowa State. The basketball media day is coming up tomorrow. Maybe we'll have some time to get onto that, but if not, we'll have plenty of hoops time later on in the year. Birch, what else stood out to you about that win at West Virginia? I mean, I thought defensively a big talker has been the amount of depth. Greg Eisler's out. Jaquan Bailey's out. Orion Vance goes out. They didn't really lose a beat. They gave up like 40 yards of offense in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of struggled at the end of the first half. I think they were kind of figuring out their footing. They gave up that really long drive, that long draining drive at the end of the half that ended up tying the game. Other than that, man, they were money. You know, that their touchdown came off the pick six. But, yeah, I mean, we've spent so much time talking about the depth of this Iowa State football team. And this is where it really paid off for Iowa State, where you have so many guys that have rotated in and out. And when I say that, the first couple of guys I really think about, the first guy I really think about is a guy like Jake Hummel and then Zach Peterson.
Yeah.
Both those guys got substantial playing time before they were kind of quote-unquote thrown into the deep end. You know, by the time Jaquan Bailey goes down, Zach Peterson was already making a name for himself that you felt like, man, he's going to be fine. That's not going to be a big worry. When Orion Vance went down, Jake Hummel is the guy that you've seen out there a ton to make you think, okay, there might not be that big of a drop-off. They should be fine. My biggest worry was going to be, you know, with Greg Eisworth not being able to play, because you saw it at the end of the TCU game just how different that Iowa State team was when he was on the field versus when he wasn't. But, man, I mean, guys like Braxton Lewis played out of their minds. So the great thing about that is now you're looking at injuries for guys like Eisworth and Vance, who probably are, at the very least, right now, you don't need to rush them back. You can give them that one extra week of rest because you know these other guys are going to be fine filling those holes.
Kind of felt like maybe that's what it was with Eisworth on Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think he'll play this week?
I'm kind of torn on this because there's a part of me that thinks, you know, I don't know if they need him to.
Well, it really doesn't matter what Matt Campbell says. We've learned that.
Yeah, you take injuries. Like, that's what we
whatever,
said post-game.
Yeah, whatever he says is just kind of like,
unless he says that player is absolutely not playing.
Yeah.
And then,
because then it's not like a blatant lie.
Yeah. So,
misdirection.
Yeah, I really just being no honest idea. Here. My thought process is that Ryan Vance probably won't play. Eisworth, I think maybe he'll play. I don't know. I mean, I
had say a it's
50, and Bailey 50. Won't play.
I had a guy on Twitter killing me.
I saw this
on Saturday because of our reporting. He was killing all of the media, but he was taking it out on me.
As we should.
Yeah, because of our reporting on Greg Eisworth throughout the week. And I'm just trying to explain to fans at this point, like, we can only report what the coaches tell us. We don't get – this isn't a program where you can go and watch practice.
Yeah.
Some of those programs you can, and you have a better idea.
Well, and it sounds like even if you would have watched practice, you would have seen Eisworth
correct.
Like, practicing at the end of this week.
We can report what the coach tells us.
Yeah. But now I think kind of our message to also pass along too, in that reporting now we've gotten to a point where I think part of that message is take it with a grain of salt.
Absolutely.
This is what Matt Campbell was saying about this injury, that injury. Believe it if you want, but this is what he's saying.
Let's not throw Matt totally under the bus. Every coach does that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, and
I don't know if every coach does it to that level.
And until you... The NCAA says the coaches will have to release participation. Yeah. Who will be able to participate and who won't? Nobody's saying because they're injured or anything. It's just saying participation. And then we'll continue to have that. Every coach I've dealt with, at least, has done that.
That's so, what I wrote about on Monday. He's not doing anything wrong.
No.
He is within the rules and... It's his right to try and protect that, but it's also frustrating for fans because, especially now with gambling being legal, I mean, that's a... Well, let's not tiptoe around that. I think if you're a fan and you were planning on Greg Eisworth being out there all week because of what you've been reading and then he's declared out, I don't think that the coach should be making, you know, personnel decisions based off of that. But I do think that there's probably... a little bit of a reason why we're getting backlash this year, and it hasn't been the case in the past. I'm just putting two and two together. But like Pete said, I think that, I mean, 2-3 years, we'll be in a place where they have to put out
hopefully
reports, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully that's the case. But you never know.
Yeah.
And then we'll see, you know, about, you know, and we'll see how the coaches react to that. I'm sure the coaches will have some sort of way around that. But
I kind of like it. It's kind of fun. It's a good challenge every week.
Oh, I agree.
To see who's going to be out there.
Yeah. 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 So.
All right. So there you go. That's the any other meat to pick off the bone from
three
that
kickers?
West? Oh, yeah, the kickers.
The long and the short of it, and then the kickoff dude.
So are they just going to – is Narverson going to be like the 40 and out guy now?
Maybe.
I mean, Campbell kind of hinted that it was an open competition because I thought I would ask him that. I go, is Narvison going to be your long-distance guy, and is Sally going to be your short guy? Because he had said, look, if a long-distance kick came, we're going to go with Narvison. And he said, well, we'll see how it plays out during the week. I mean, there are a couple of different ways to look at it. One, you probably want a consistent kicker out there. But then two,
do you, though?
I don't know.
Like, what advantage does that? I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Because Connor Sally's never been that good from
maybe
long distance.
Stability, knowing that okay, you're going to be kicking this field goal no matter what.
Well, for the mental aspect of the players,
I mean, okay. Maybe. But on the other hand, you see Matt Campbell go out of his way to specialize roles for certain guys. I mean. Most notably, I think of a guy like Kyle Starcevich, the holder. How many teams have their backup quarterback be it? Well, he just wanted to get Starcevich on the field. I mean, now he may not care about that mental part of the game where he's thinking, okay, now I can have a Sally kick the short ones. I've got Narvison kicking the long ones, and I've got both those guys in the game.
And let me add that I didn't think Narvison's, whatever it was, 45-yarder, it wasn't exactly a thing of beauty, was it? Did it clear by a long ways?
I don't know. It was right down the middle.
Yeah, I know it was down the middle, but
I didn't really pay attention.
Yeah, it looked to me like it was kind of low. So maybe, I don't know.
I will say this: he's your guy on scholarship too. You're paying him to come here. So I think to a certain degree, probably want to get everything out of him that you can. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you're right or wrong. I hadn't thought about it that way. I kind of figured it would just be...
You just go with whoever you think you can use. But we've seen that we're banging on Asali, but the ones he missed were 49-yarders.
Well, that's the thing, too, and it's just...
And one of them was blocked, and I don't know whether he kicked it low or what.
They're going to have a pretty good idea, though, I would think, on practice.
Like, exactly.
They chart all that. If one guy's clearly better from 45 and out, in my opinion, they've stumbled onto something that they shouldn't get away from. Like, they've been just going for it on that area of the field, and when you're averaging 7 yards per play like Iowa State is, you're better off going for it on 4th and 3 than you are kicking a 48 yard.
What are they? It'd be interesting to see. It'd be interesting to see what they're averaging on 4th down. I guess it wouldn't be tough. You just go. We're only 6 games in, so you could just go look at the play by plays. But that'd be interesting to see what they average and what they do on 4th downs. I'm guessing it's all Purdy, but maybe I'm wrong.
All right, we'll continue coming up after this. This is Cyclone Insider. It is Randy Peterson, Tommy Burch. We are here until 7 o'clock tonight, and then we're going to hand it over to the St. Louis Cardinals Radio Network for Game 4.
You buying a supper?
Of the NLCS, sure. Why not? We'll get some pizza. And hopefully the Cardinals can get a win just to, you know, for baseball fans. Might as well.
Some of us are Cardinal fans.
Is that your team? Like,
if I had to have a team, yeah. Cardinals and the Yankees.
Yeah.
But
well, you could have a really good World Series.
I could. But I'm not I'm not Bill Finley like.
Yeah. No, few people are when it comes to the St. Louis Cardinals. We'll do that coming up. We're going to look ahead to Texas Tech. And then I want to talk to Peterson about this Denver airport so he makes sure he knows what he's getting into.
I've been to the Denver airport. Yeah. We'll get to it.
Y'all got to stay tuned for that coming up later on here on 1460 KXNO.
Everything you need to know about Iowa State, it's Cyclone Insider with the Des Moines Register, powered by G Migs Fifth Street Pub on 1460 KXNO.
All right, welcome back. It is Cyclone Insider here with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO. Iowa State is heading to Lubbock on Saturday, and the Texas Tech Red Raiders, Pete, got screwed by the Big 12 on Saturday, and I bet they're going to be pretty ticked off when the Clones come to town.
No kidding. I wrote that this morning. Big 12 refs, you know, if Baylor continues like they're doing, they're going to play Oklahoma in the championship game. Whereas if they'd have made the right call, and if Texas Tech would have kicked a field goal, ended that first overtime with a field goal, or whatever, with a score, the game's over. And it's Oklahoma and everybody else. Oklahoma's unbeaten and everybody else with one loss. So, yeah, that was gigantic, not only for Texas Tech, but also for the rest of at least the three or four major contenders, of which Iowa State is one.
Yeah, I'm a big Matt Wells fan. And a full disclosure, the reason I started paying attention to him was because his brother Luke, who coached here, he was the tight ends coach for Paul Rhodes for a few years, and you know, he left and goes to Utah State and becomes the offensive coordinator for Matt Wells. And I just kind of started, you know, when you know these guys, you kind of start to follow their careers just a little bit and you keep an eye on them. And Utah State just happened to be one of those teams that was always on those, like, Friday night games or those Thursday night games on ESPN. So I watched them a lot. And I soon became an admirer of Matt Wells. I think he's a really good coach. I think of all the guys who entered the league this year, Tommy, I thought he had the best chance to win right away based off of what was left on the roster. And I thought that while he's a good offensive coach, he'll be addition by subtraction when it comes to defense compared to Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah,
and we've absolutely seen that already.
Yeah, anything was going to be better. But yeah, I mean, he walked into a really good situation where, I mean, you talk about a lot of the offensive weapons that they had coming back. And then, I mean, especially when it came to a guy like Bowman, the question was, you know, him staying healthy. But, it's been exciting to watch. I mean, I think it's the big question was, how much do you tear down with that program? Because you want to instill your own philosophies and stuff like that in the program. But it's like you said, there are so many good things coming back. You don't have to start from scratch necessarily, kind of like what, Matt Campbell had to do here. So that's why I think it's a little bit of a surprise just how well they're doing, but not a complete shock.
Yeah. What about you? What's your read on Tech, Peterson?
Jet Duffy's pretty good.
He's not bad. I thought that their season was over when Bowman exited in the lineup due to injury, but this Jet Duffy is—he's produced.
That's all they do down there is produce QBs.
And apparently,
even with Kingsbury gone,
he's 57-86 in the last two games for 786 yards.
What did he do against Baylor? Do you have the Baylor stats in front of you?
I have them right in front of me. 31 out of 42, two picks for 362.
Okay, so that's not bad against.
He's a 64% passer, which. You take that as you,
yeah.
What you want to do with that, but I don't think he's thrown against a secondary like or a defense like Iowa State will show him. And actually, I started to say secondary, but Iowa State's where the Achilles heel is if there's on the defense, as we all know right now. But I think Iowa State will. Or he'll have a test against Iowa State, but it'll be interesting watching. He's not a big rusher. I mean, I know that
his name's Jet.
I know. He's got a jet for an arm, I guess. But he has rushed it, but it's not game changing rusher like Brewer, for example.
Yeah. No. I'm still too like this is one of those deals too with Wells. Well, I think he took over a program with some decent players and stuff, especially compared to, like what Les Miles has or even what Troy Brown, which we just saw in West Virginia. I'm still questioning, what is Texas Tech's identity going to be under Matt Wells? Really good offensive coach, but he was going to try and even things out a little bit. And I think that we're still kind of having to wait. I'm taking the wait-and-see approach on that. I don't really know exactly what they're...
They're still not playing defense. I mean, they're at the bottom in the big, towards the bottom in rushing defense and pass defense. Their scoring average has gone down to 31 points a game, whereas we've seen Texas Tech right up there with Oklahoma in years past. So, and the total offense is it's... almost 500 yards, which is good. But it's like I asked you, like I mentioned to you before the game, Chris, I don't know why this is a seven, why Iowa State's only a 7-point favorite. At least that's what it was when I last saw it.
Yeah, the only thing I would say to it is the fact that, realistically, if not for a terrible call, they win in Baylor on Saturday, a team that just beat Iowa State, and I would...
And maybe.
Then what is our conversation, right? If they get the call right, Tech wins that game. What is our conversation like about
pretty much
that?
A pick 'em pride?
I don't know about the spread, no. But I'm saying that I think that greatly changes the conversation. And I mean, I'll go out and say it: they won that game. They were robbed of that game. So maybe we should be. Taking a little, you see where I'm at?
Yeah.
I just think that greatly changes the interpretation of what Iowa State's walking into, and they beat Baylor. They just didn't get credit for it.
Sure.
I think they'll see a defense that they haven't seen a whole lot this year. So I mean, Iowa State will be.
I would agree.
I think that's where Iowa State will win the game, and I think they'll have trouble scoring points.
Cyclone Insider here with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO. All right, Birchie, let's finish up this Texas Tech conversation, and then maybe in the third segment we can talk a little bit of basketball, and of course the Denver Airport. Well, we'll just go there right now, Peterson. So you have a layover in Denver?
Yeah.
Are you aware that allegedly, reportedly?
It has been reported. I've read it in the Denver.
The Illuminati in the New World Order is located underneath the Denver.
When you
airport.
Said that first, I thought you said Lou Malnati, as in pizza in Chicago.
Have you heard about all the shenanigans that's going on underneath there?
I've heard about it. Alleged, and I always take things alleged. So,
do you notice the giant satanic horse? when you drive into the Denver airport?
I don't drive into the Denver airport.
When you go to the Denver airport, and I know how you like to go for your walks. You like to get the heart rate going, get your steps in.
Yeah.
Look at the like paintings and stuff that's all over the place.
I've done that.
A lot of red flags.
A ton of it's just a red flag everywhere you look. This is not a normal.
This is not Des Moines International Airport.
This is where I bow out of this
and
conversation.
This is where, so let me get you some literature, and I'll send it to you before you take off.
Oh,
on
please
Friday.
Do. Yeah.
About the amount of federal spending that went into the Denver airport, and how it took like an extra like year and a half to build, and nobody knows why. Where did all the millions of dollars go from the federal government, and why did it take so long, Peterson? Let me ask you that.
Because they had snafus with snow. I mean, they have weather there, so they couldn't. They had weather delays.
Fake news.
And as far as oh, you want to go fake news on me? Okay. Anyway. And as far as...
You can say that to anybody, but then when you say
yeah,
that to
but
somebody...
Yeah, but it's so disrespectful.
When you say that to somebody in the news media, they get... Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, if a news... anyway. And, okay, so they had...
I was clearly kidding. We're talking about the Denver airport and the New World Order.
They had weather delays. Okay. And as far as you're talking about the whatever billion dollars, I want to see how that compares to other airports. That were built.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to get you some literature.
Built within, you know, whatever, when that...
Got a great podcast for you to listen to as well.
Oh, well, email the WWs on that to me, too.
It's a two-part podcast.
Oh, I'm in.
Well, the actual airport, too, from what I remember, is like it only takes up a certain percentage of that actual land, too. Like, there's so much more to the land.
That, and if you see, like, the dude, there's so much crazy stuff about this.
It's like I've told you before. It's kind of like Area 51. Like, do I believe that there are extraterrestrial activity taking place at Area 51? I don't know. I'm not ruling it out. But at the very least, there's something going on at Area 51. There's something going on at the Denver airport that we got to get to the bottom of.
It's crazy, too, like, how crazy some of these conspiracy theories about the Denver airport go. Like, if you look at, like, an aerial, like, a bird's eye view of it and all the, like, tunnels and stuff that people will, like, draw out for you, there's a group out there that thinks it looks like a swastika. Like, that's how, like, nuts we've gotten with this Denver airport thing.
You see anything if you're looking
for it. Yeah, exactly. I don't buy that stuff, but I do believe that the New World Order
that there is
underneath.
Something going on down there.
I don't know about the New World Order part, but I do think that at the very least, when you talk about all the federal spending and all the stuff that went into it, I think that there are tunnels under there. And like, so there was another scenario where on like one of the there's a situation where there was a scare and they shipped Obama to Denver out of nowhere. This is pretty quickly after the Denver airport opened. Well, that's interesting. Why are we sending them to
you've seen
Denver all of a sudden? I think that there are tunnels under there that are like bomb shelters.
You've seen the movie 2012, right? With John Cusack.
Is that the one where everything like freezes and stuff?
No, that's The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
2012 is where the end of the world's coming. And
that's from like the Mayan calendar, right?
Yeah, yeah. And they actually do have a new world order. You have to be extremely wealthy to essentially buy a spot on these life-saving planes, transportation vehicles, whatever.
Yeah. All right. So let me
question,
ask
Peterson.
Yeah. So let me ask you, geniuses.
You've come to the right place.
So
don't forget the genius part either.
So Disney World in Orlando, there are tunnels. I've been in those tunnels. That's where their main offices. Some of the offices are. I've been in those tunnels.
Okay.
Because I've known people that have worked in PR there. I have been in the tunnels in Disney World. So is
you've
that
seen the guts of Disney?
I have. So is that a New World Order thing?
No,
no. They're telling you
that's
about
private.
It.
This is federal.
Yeah, they're telling you.
See,
about
I went
it.
To the right place here.
They don't want us to know that the Illuminati is under there, because if we know that, then it'll be like Area 51, and people are going to be.
But we're talking about it now, so
well, it's because of really good
obviously
research.
It's no secret.
Well, that's because a lot of people are out there doing really good reporting and research, trying to get to the bottom of this.
Whatever.
We need to call friend of the program, former colleague of you guys, Sean Keeler, who's now
out there
in Denver at the Denver Post, and we'll see if he can get us some insight.
I feel
Monte
like
Morris. Maybe we talk to Monte about it.
I feel like Sean is a believer.
Man, I've had a lot of beers with Sean where I start getting into the conspiracy theory stuff, and I don't think he'd buy it.
Sean's more intelligent than all of us put together.
Yeah, I know.
Remember that. He's a Northwestern grad.
But what Sean would do is sit there and just bait me to keep talking. Yeah. And then he would just, you know,
he'd set my own trap.
Who was it from Iowa State that you convinced the Chicago hotel was haunted? Was it Naz?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. And he was all about it, too.
Yeah.
Naz is smart. He opens his eyes.
I feel like Monte would.
Oh, yeah.
Monte's also in the know out there. He may be part of the
establishment out there. Yeah, he's one of the rich guys out in Denver.
Monte's not flying out of the Denver airport either, remember.
Where do they fly out?
I'm sure they're flying out of some auxiliary. Yeah. You know, like everybody.
All right. The Denver airport, because that's another thing that's so weird about it. When you start to do research, why is it like 45 minutes from Denver?
The land's cheaper.
The red flag.
The land's cheaper.
You might say that, Peterson, but I think
it's not in a neighborhood.
The airport they had before was just fine, too.
It was horrible.
Oh, that's just your opinion, man.
It is my opinion.
All right. Thanks for letting us have fun with that, everybody.
And it wasn't big enough either.
We're going to try to hammer out some Iowa State basketball. Believe it or not, Media Day is coming up tomorrow in Ames, where I'm never ready for the basketball media days because I feel like we just get football going and then boom, they're like, hey, it's crossover season because the fans aren't ready for basketball. But it's coming up. The Iowa State women are putting up a countdown thing on their Twitter. It's like 24 days from their season opener.
They're going to be an intriguing team.
Yeah, they certainly will. They had their media day a week ago. So, yeah, let's do a little Cyclone basketball talk when we come back as we count down to St. Louis Cardinals playoff baseball. Cards are down 3-0. Hopefully they can steal one tonight from the Nationals. You'll be able to hear it here on Des Moines Sports Station 1460 KXNO.
Everything you need to know about Iowa State. It's Cyclone Insider with the Des Moines Register, powered by G Migs Fifth Street Pub on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back, Cyclone Insider here with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO as we wrap things up on your Tuesday programming reminder. So actually, this is good to get out there now. Do not hold me to this, but I believe if the Cardinals win tonight, we won't have a show tomorrow, which I don't know where we would move Hawk Central to. I know we would move it somewhere, but I'm just, again, just a programming note because I don't know what Downs has in mind. So, but if the Cardinals lose, then we're done airing St. Louis Cardinals baseball here for the season on 1460 KXNO. Yeah. That's what's going on. Then, of course, High School Insider coming up on Friday, as that time of year is really heating up as well. High school football playoffs they start just in a couple of weeks. So there you go. Basketball media day tomorrow for the Clones. Clones got a basketball commitment on Friday. Dudley Blackwell is his name. I'm not going to pretend to know a ton about it at this point in time, but that happened on Friday. And Peterson, what are you looking forward to tomorrow?
Good question. There's a lot of
storylines with this team.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to think of storylines that hadn't already been written. I mean, we've had availability with these guys three times at least. We know Rashear Bolton, what he's going to bring. I want to just spend most of my time with Tyrese because he's fascinating to me.
He is a fascinating young man.
And he's the straw that serves a drink. You know, for this team anyway. So I just want to pick his brain on some things. I mean, Princess Nixon's a good story. Learn how to play defense under Larry Eustachy, obviously. Bolton, you know, we've discussed him ad nauseum. Mike Jacobson will start. So there's four guys right there. And then what do? If you want to go two bigs, you go Jacobson and then Solomon Young, who's who I get. That's another one I'm going to spend some time with too, is Solo.
Yeah.
you know, coming back from all his nasty stuff, and Condit. So I mean, there's your six right there, and then the rest of the rotation will be, I don't know, take your pick: Trey Jackson, Caleb Grill, Terrence Lewis, or Zion. I don't know, because he's not going to play 10 guys. He's going to play 7, maybe 8. So it's going to be interesting battles to see where who gets those positions. But I think Trey Jackson is the best of the incoming guys.
Yeah, I know that you spend a lot of time at the Cap City League just trying to get to know these guys. I don't get to as much as I used to. But did that confirm your Trey Jackson thought there just by seeing him physically?
Or is it did. You know, you can't, like you said, you can't tell a whole lot from that thing.
I feel
anyway.
Like you can't, but you can also, like, we've watched guys and be like, okay, he's not ready. You can tell that. Like, Sherrod Dorsey Walker dropping 70 doesn't mean much, but if he's only averaging 10, that's generally pretty telling.
And we saw Boo Boo average a triple-double.
True.
Trey Jackson was the most impressive newcomer to me. Caleb Grill also. Caleb Grill is very athletic. But Trey Jackson, whether he can shoot it, handle the ball. Watching Bolton also, he was good. Bolton is, you know, and all this, you guys have talked about this and I've written it, but the fact that he's coming from one Power 5 program to another is, I don't know if you're losing any, I don't know how much, it's not like a newcomer coming into the program. He can adapt. He's very smart. I think he'll be good. Tyrese is going to run the point if there is, in fact, somebody walking the ball up the floor and they need somebody, an instigator of the offense. But essentially, it's going to be just the way it has been under both Fred and Prohm, is whoever gets it goes. You know, as long as it's not a big guy. I mean, if Tyrese gets a rebound, he's going. If Prentice Nixon gets a rebound, it's his. If Bolton gets the rebound, boom, they're going down to the other end. So, you know, they've got multiple quote-unquote point guard types, and I think we sometimes make a big deal out of who plays, you know, out of the numbered positions. But certainly at Iowa State, it's point guard is multi-headed right now.
Yeah, and I get the feeling, too, like, regardless, it's going to be another one of those years where you're watching the team really have to develop a lot in the early season. We saw that especially last year, and we were kind of waiting on it all to come together, and eventually it did, but it just seems like there's a lot of moving parts here.
And interestingly, it came together without Lindell Wigginton.
Yeah.
Just threw
Which
that in there.
Which nobody saw coming.
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, they got through that. And we all know what I'm talking about.
And so
they got through it. What's going to happen with Iowa State is they're going to get a very good test in the Bahamas, coming out of the gate right away playing Michigan.
Even the second game of the year is on the road against a Power 5 team too. Oregon State. I don't really know what they have, but it's still
a Power 5 team and on the road.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're playing East Cupcake State all the time. So they're going to know early what they have, or at least what they have to do to be, you know, to finish fourth, fifth. And I'm assuming when the Big 12 coaches' picks come out tomorrow, I believe tomorrow, I'm assuming Iowa State will be, Kansas, Baylor, Texas Tech, Iowa State? I don't know, right in there somewhere. Fourth, fifth. Without Bolton, they wouldn't have been. But Bolton gets a lot of respect around the conference. I know that.
Yeah, I saw. The only reason I know it is because I do the Iowa State preview for the Athlon. Picked ninth, all the way ninth in that one. And that
did you pick it?
I did not.
That done before Bolton?
No, actually a really an interesting conversation that we had, because you know how those things are. You have to go to print months before, and I didn't know how to write it, because you write a very different story with Bolton or without, and I rolled the dice, and was really glad that Bolton
Is eligible.
Was eligible.
Yeah, immediately eligible.
Based off of how I wrote the thing. But, yeah, that's where they put it. I think it's a little bit like Big 12 football in the sense, too, this year, where you're going to have like two or three teams, and then really in the middle is going to be you're kind of in a juggling spot right there.
Kansas is going to be
they're loaded.
Clearly in what could be Bill Self's last year. Could be very, very loaded. What do you think Self does?
He should go to the NBA.
Yeah, that's what I'm.
He's going to be.
That's what I'm theorizing.
I don't see this NCAA thing getting any better for him. I'm not saying it'll.
I don't think
worse.
It's going to get him. He's Teflon. I don't think it'll get him.
Maybe not, but it might get the program. It's going to get the program, and he'll be associated with it forever.
Yeah.
So if he just goes to the NBA, they can kind of forget about it.
Yeah, exactly. Or he could, I think that would be, some people thought that he may go to the NBA after last year, but there'll be jobs open. So I don't look for him to be back the following year, and Kansas is extremely good, is very good. Baylor's good. And I don't see Texas Tech, but I'm guessing that people will pick them high because of the success they had last year.
Pete, good stuff, man.
All right.
Appreciate your time today.
Go Cardinals.
As always, yeah, Cardinals are coming up next. Hopefully they can get a win to keep local postseason baseball somewhat interesting out here with not a lot of local teams hanging around. So appreciate your time, Peterson.
Right.
Thanks to Tommy Burke for listening. We'll let you know what's going on with Hawk Central. Again, if the Cardinals win tonight, I'm not sure if Hawk Central will be tomorrow or on Thursday, but we'll figure it out. Send it off to Mr. Rooney and Mr. Shannon here on 1460 KXNO.